Is this real? Or is this just a ride? The world is like a ride. You think it's real? It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. The world is like a ride. You think it's real? It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. Between fear and love. Life goes up and down, round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored. It's up and down, round and round, and it's very loud, louder. Don't worry, don't be afraid, It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. Why are we here?
I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. Know what I call it? The big electron. Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa. The big electron. Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa. It doesn't punish. Doesn't reward. It doesn't judge at all. It just is. And so do we. For a little while,
Greetings, programs. You're tuned into UCY.TV on this fine Sunday, September 24th, 2017. And somehow we're here despite the yesterday's end of the world events. We somehow made it through. But since you're here, that must mean it's time for Red Pill Sunday School. Welcome to our second show of what we hope will be a long and interesting series of shows. Today I'd like to start off by offering a little different perspective today. And I saw a different perspective on The Matrix. You know, The Matrix is one of these days we'll break down that plagiaristic, ridiculous movie for what it really is. Talk about the books it was actually based on. And go over all the instances where it's just a copy of someone else's work. In fact, there's not really, surprisingly, even anything original in that movie. A mishmash of all other movies is basically what it is. So we'll talk about that sometime. But today I want you to consider one thing. Now, the theory was posed, and of course this really has nothing to do with the movie itself, just a theory, sort of comparing it to more to real life or to our current situation. And the theory goes like this, that there are just certain people that just, like myself, who and like you, because you're listening to someone like myself and participating in activist and other activities that try to expose the falseness, the simulation that is this system. But the idea was that instead of the outside world getting pulled out of the Matrix, you were actually being put into a Zion Matrix, another computer simulation, another system of lies, an illusion, a delusion in some computer bank somewhere, made for those problem children, that 10% maybe, that just cannot function in this absolute ridiculous thing we call society, that programmed monetary system. We just can't function. It's just not in our, we don't have what's called that human nature, that nature that is created by man, that belongs to man. We just can't function. We try and we succeed. We take, some of us take drugs to get by. Some of us drink. Some of us, sit in our basements. Some of us, we drowned ourselves in talk radio. We look for truth in this so-called truth movement. But, you know, this notion that the truth movement is just a second matrix, it's just a second simulation, a place for all the people who can't quite fit in to go go through a little bit of hardship. You know, you just change the programming of the Matrix that already exists. You change the programming a little. And you put a bunch of people with cognitive dissonance in and that won't ever listen to you, and plug in everybody else, and hey, you've got a second Matrix. You've got the Zion Matrix, right? Where everything's a little tougher. Not everything tastes like chicken. I'll tell you that. And so that's kind of where we're all sitting. We're all sitting in the Patriot movement or the sovereignty movement, or no, I want liberty. I'm an anarchist. I'm a atheist. I'm a this. I'm a that. I all call ourselves something. We all want to be part of something. But really, it's just another system of programming. Call it alternative. Alternative, and yet it's the truth. Okay. Yeah, it's just this weird kind of place that we've all sort of gathered into, this online media spectacular. And ironically, it's all internet-based, just like the Matrix. You know, there would be no truth movement if it weren't for the internet, correct? So really, we do most of our work and meetups and everything through this deadly programming. This program that is taking over the AI. So it's not that different, really. We talk about things that aren't truth. In other words, they're not self-evident, which we talked about last week. They're not part of nature. They're not part of reality. We argue over how much money is going to be valued in 2 weeks and 2 months and 2 years. Which, of course, we have no idea. There's no one out there that has any idea. Oh, but this economist said this, and this economist said that, and that banker said this. Well, again, those things don't exist in nature. They're not real. They're flattering titles, and you're respecting the fiction that's coming out of them. And that's why we're stuck still in this sort of truth matrix, if you will. You got the big lie, and then you've got the little lie. But it's time that we come out of that, is my point. It's time that we come out of this sort of false matrix of information that we keep passing between each other. Every new generation of activists and truthers, and all we're doing is we're passing on the same old mysteries that we were taught by the others, right? The ones before us. Okay, here's what you need to know. You got the Jews, you got the Rothschilds, you've got the bankers, you've got this, and you've got that. Welcome to the truth movement. Really, it's like a portfolio, right? like a new hire packet or something. And if you don't learn these things, and if you're not on board with our truth, then really you don't really fit in here. Well, I don't fit in there anymore myself. Which, if that isn't obvious by now, it should be. And this is why I'm sort of here to say, hey, let's step out of this sort of false paradigm that we've all put ourselves in. The one where we think everybody is crazy but us, and of course most people look at us like we're crazy because when we talk, we do sound a little bit crazy. Talking about no planes or planes, talking about flat earth or no flat earth, and telling people that they're absolutely off their rocker if they don't see what we see. Well, yeah, that hasn't worked. It's not going to work. You're never going to win any battles. You don't have any primary evidence. You have a YouTube video, which if you... I challenge people. Why don't you take a bunch of YouTube videos, put them on a disc, put them in a folder, and send that to a... Call it a dossier and send it to the FBI. See what happens. They're going to ask you for primary or even secondary evidence, not third-party YouTube videos. Again, YouTube is not a source document. You can't really use YouTube as a source. All right? It's just, and I speak, when I say that, I mean officially. You have to have there's a U.S. code on chain of evidence and chain of custody. Go read it, and you'll see that for being such a a big movement. We have never actually done anything. There's never been a court case. There's never been any time where we've said, okay, here's the proof. I'm going to put it into a concise and easy-to-read document, a dossier, so that an FBI agent can actually do a proper due diligence. We can do most of the work for him, so that he doesn't, you know, that's how he's going to take it. That's the only way we're going to get anybody to do anything. Here's all the facts laid out. Here's the players involved. Here's the fingers pointed, and here's the proof. Here's the backing. Here's the documents, the documentation. Here's the chain of custody for the chain of evidence, and whammo, you've got there it is, man. Here, that's our 9/11 dossier on how it happened. But see, we haven't done that. We have never done anything. And when I say we, I mean the collective bunch of us that have just been taken from the main matrix and dumped into the secondary matrix, the one for bad children, the one that says, oh, you can't get along in the quote-unquote real world. You know, I call this Red Pill Sunday School because I'm trying to get you to take the red pill to come out of this false truth matrix and go into the real truth. Go back to nature, back to God. Oh, no, he said God. Yes, I know, I understand. It's a term that nobody likes to hear because you've been conditioned away from it. I get it. I feel the same way. But unless you understand what that actually means as a metaphor, as a way of saying something completely different, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Now, the red pill, the concept of the red pill, I remember first seeing it in Total Recall. I remember reading, Piers Anthony, I think, did the script or wrote the book, I can't remember, Total Recall. And I remember the red pill, you know. So here's a guy who goes in, gets induced into a fake vacation. We don't know if he's really there or if it's a dream-induced state meant to be a realistic experience, right? Well, that sounds familiar. And the guy comes in, his doctor comes in and says, buddy, you've had a schizoid embolism and you need to take this red pill. It's a symbol. It's a symbol that means you want to come back to reality. But wait a minute. Was he in reality? It seemed like reality. He's on Mars all of a sudden. He's a secret agent. All his memory was wiped. Right? Is it real or is it not real? Are we in the truth movement or is the truth something completely different? Oh, wait a minute. Is this just another matrix? Do we have to take another red pill? What if I was to tell you that the Bible is actually the red pill? The one aspect of everything that you've been conditioned in every possible way to ignore, to talk down upon, to... What if I was to tell you it's the foundation of all our system of law, it's the common law, and the only problem is that it's voluntary. And when you volunteer not to follow the law, which is the Bible, the natural law, of course, people want to acknowledge nature without a God or a creator, and I understand that. It's a more logical, reasonable thing, but logic without grammar, logic without fact, but nonetheless, you know, logic. It's much easier to consider that way, and it's much easier to be anarchical, lawless, licentious towards the natural law. But of course, how can you ignore nature or the creator of nature, the God of nature, as the authority of the law and still call it the natural law? You see, you have to have some form of authority figure. And really the only reason that the word God is even used, because it's such a generic term, it turns out, that God is a replacement term for so many words in the Bible. You know, if you read the older text, each time the word God would be used, it would be a different word. Sometimes it would be El, or Elohim, or Jehovah, or Theos, which meant God-like. It could be a king, it could be a magistrate, it could be so many things, Archon, but what we find then is that the king came along and said, well, I'm a god. The Pope's a god as well. Since we're the vicars of God, the replacement gods, the anti-gods, anti just means in place of or instead of, well, then let's just call all these instances in the Bible where kings and tyrants who had godlike power over their people and harmed them, let's just call them God. Hey, that way everybody thinks that God is a bad guy. God does all good and all evil. God, you know, God, God, God. And that way they'll blame God. They'll hate God. They'll turn away from God. No one will understand the Bible. Even the devout Christians will read it without understanding. And that's a horrible thing to consider, that you're reading an entire book like that and actually getting no understanding of the message. Why? Because you're not reading it as it was written. It's been changed. It's a simulacrum, a copy without an original. A copy without an original. That's what the Bible is. Pardon me. So, yeah, all these words that are spoken as God. So when I say the word God, I only mean one thing, and that is the highest supreme being. Being a verb, of course, the what is happening right now, all of nature, all of Jehovah, as the Bible refers to it, YHWH, Yahweh, they all actually go back to the same term. I know there's a lot of people that'll argue about that, but those same people, of course, don't have any sources but, say, the Theosophical Society, or they don't actually go. I mean, you know, and just so that we can really understand this, just I want to lay a little bit of foundation down here, because until you get this and get it from the horse's mouth, I guess you're not gonna, maybe you don't believe me, maybe you can't spend the time to do a little due diligence to just go click on the word God. Go to blueletterbible.com, blueletterbible.com, pull up any verse, pull up Genesis 1:1, pull up that verse, click on that word God, and the Lord or and God created the heavens and the earth. You're gonna find that it's a word that was turned into God. It's the name of a god that was just turned into a generic term, God. And it means the gods, the Elohim. And when you say, for instance, and you talk about the world, when the Bible refers to the world, for the most part, it's referring to the metaphorical world, not the earth, not the dirt, not all of nature, but to the world that man has created. The system of mammon, the system of money, the system of business, commerce, all this stuff that is not of reality, not of nature, all stuff that God, Jehovah, nature, being doesn't respect. It's artifice. It's artificial. It's quote unquote sin. Sin. It's just an, you know, sin, and S-I-N-S-Y-N. Think about where S-Y-N. Go look up the word S-Y-N and all the words in the dictionary that start with S-Y-N. Synagogue. Right? Synthetic. Synthesis. You know, all these terms that start with sin. They're all false. They're artificial things. But I want to read you today from Encyclopedia Judaica. This is, of course, well, the title or the entry for this is God's, comma, name of. So the name of God's. It's in the G book, and it's around page 674-680. Gods, the name of gods is the title, and here's what it says, just so you know that I'm not nuts, that I'm not just making this up. Anybody can do their due diligence, but sometimes you have to hear it. Various Hebrew terms are used for God in the Bible. Let me say that again. various Hebrew terms are used for the word God in the Bible. Some of these are employed in both the generic and specific sense. Generic and specific. Others are used only as the personal name of God, of the God of Israel. Okay, again, going back to Jehovah. Most of these terms were employed also by the Canaanites to designate their pagan gods. This is not surprising, since on settling in the Promised Land, the patriarchs and early Israelites made the language of Canaan their own. And when we go back into the creation story, we find that Genesis, or i.e. the book of Moses, there's actually, you know, Genesis is a very new term that was placed onto the book of Moses not that long ago, in fact. So we're really talking the book of Moses, the Jewish law. And back then it was, of course, pagan. It was, well, it was actually Babylonian. And you find that the creation story, the Genesis story, and most Jews especially would agree that you're talking about the Elna Elish, which is the Babylonian creation story, dumbed down to the extreme to be made and turned into the Genesis, i.e. Book of Moses, the creation story. The Babylonian creation story, that's what it is. And, of course, it includes the gods Marduk and Baal. It includes all kinds of gods that in the Old Testament, the Israelites, the Babylonians were worshiping. So, you know, it's sort of one of those logical, reasonable conclusions to say, oh, okay, this is not the story of the creation of the planet. It's the creation of the world, the fictional world, the world of commerce, the world of fiction. The gods created the world. So, the heavens and the earth, right? Well, again, every word has a special meaning that you have to look up. And it's very interesting when you actually do look that first sentence up, because you'll find some words that aren't included in the English language. In fact, I should, let me pull that up real quick, because I think it's important. People think I'm nuts right now, but, you know, when I pulled it up, I was very surprised to find this sort of coded, if you will, language. Let's see, it's the, again, going to pull it up for my book. I just got to think on the spot here. Ah, yes, here we go. So, to put it properly versed in the translation, when you actually look in the concordances at these sort of extra words that are there, there's this extra word, it's E-T-H. And this word E-T-H has a special meaning. It means entity, or I don't remember the other word that goes with it. Sort of like a simulation. To put it properly, it goes like this. In the beginning, the gods, i.e. the magistrates, the Elohim, a plural for God, created, bara, the entity, eth, the heavens, shamayin, and the entity, eth, the earth, which is Eretz. All right, so when we read it, in the beginning, the gods created the entity, the heavens, and the entity, the earth. So essentially, the archons created the, I mean, it's different. It's different because, again, this is the Elna Elish, the Babylonian creation story that is taken and altered to a point where you can bring a bunch of Babylonians over into the new system of law. And that's how it works, man. That's why the Bible has no original. I would imagine that the Bible was a completely different book when it first started, with different characters and different names and different... I imagine that what we have today is the same exact thing. It was altered to bring a bunch of pagans over into, quote-unquote, this new religion or this new law, to be more specific. Remember, it's all about the law. It's not a religion. So, you look at this, and Elohim, the gods, said, let us make man in our image, plural, our image, after our likeness. Well, wait a minute. What the heck? How does this work? What do you mean? First of all, in our image, but second of all, our, us, the gods. Not one plural God, but our. This is what the Bible says. What, have you not questioned this? Have you not thought, well, why is it plural? Why let us make man in our image? Why not let I am make man as part of the I am? Something doesn't make sense here. Unless we're not talking about Jehovah. We're talking about the Elohim. El meaning the a god, and Ahim putting it into a plural. We'll get to that in a minute. In our image, Strong's H6754, Tselem is the word, from the Jesenius Hebrew Chaldee lexicon. It means a shadow, metaphorically used of anything vain, hence an image, likeness. Let us make them in our shadow. Let us make them in our image. An image is another word for an idol. Well, why? That changes the whole meaning of this this sentence. In our image, in the Strong's outline of the usage in the Bible, again, image. And then it says something really cool. It says, of tumors. Do you hear that? Of tumors, mice, heathen gods, image, likeness, of resemblance, mere empty image or semblance, figuratively. It says figuratively, and up here it says metaphorically. You see, it's always about the metaphor. Now, by the way, I'm on page 360 of my book, if anybody wants to follow along. I'm simply reading out of my book. Tumor, what the hell? Why would Strong say define in our image or salam as tumors? A tumor means to swell, a swelling, a morbid enlargement of any part of the body. Obviously, it's metaphoric in its meaning. What does a tumor do? It swells. It's bombastic. It's bigger than life, right? It's not real. In other words, it's not part of nature. It's not in harmony with nature. That's what I'm looking for. A word of very comprehensive signification, affected pomp. Right? Pomp and circumstance. Pomp is what you see in the king's chambers and the queen with all her dresses. The pope with all his pomp and circumstance. Bombast in language. Swelling words or expressions, right? Tumorous words. False magnificence or sublimity. Wow. Oh, the Rolling Stones. Oh, they're magnificent. They're sublime. No, they're drug addicts. They're actually pretty disgusting. And, you know, good music. Okay, that's your choice. Whatever. You know, you learn about the music industry. It's hard to take it seriously anymore. But I'll have you go to Jan Irvin for that lesson over at Gnostic Media. But, I got to tell you, what is a tumor? A tumor is a bunch of cells that grow in the wrong place, do the wrong thing, and harm the rest of the body. Well, what are the gods? What are the gods of the nations, the idols? What are the presidents and kings and popes? What are the, affected pomp, bombastic in language, magnificence, false magnificence? Gee, sounds familiar, doesn't it? And then it actually gives the definition for God, Strong's H430. Now, this is one instance where you look at the word God I said, and God said, let us make it. Right? And it says, it's a reference to the Elohim, which is how it sounds, how it's said, which is a plural of H-4-3-3 in Strong's, which is Elohah, a deity or the deity, God or little g God, big G God or little g God. Gods in the ordinary sense, because it is a plural reference, but specifically used in the plural of the supreme God, occasionally applied by way of deference to magistrates. What have I told you? What is the definition of a magistrate? A judge? Well, what is definition of judge? Oh, that's God. God judges. That's why we pray in court to the God, the magistrate. Magistrate can be a king, a president, a prime minister, anything can be, anything of power can be a God, i.e. a magistrate, and therefore an Elohim or God as translated. And sometimes as a superlative, angels exceeding gods, godless, great judges, it says, and mighty men out of Strong's Concordance. You see, and then it defines after our likeness as a term, as a word. After our likeness is the word demuth, and I'm probably saying that wrong. Strong's H1823. And in its outline of Bible usage, Strong says, a likeness or what? A similitude. A simulation, really? Because, you see, the maxim of law and of science and of nature and of reality is that similitude is not sameness. What is similar is never the same. My mirror image is not even the same. It's backwards. Like, manner, fashion, likeness of, resemblance, model, shape. In other words, we're back to the image. A similitude, likeness, and image. Let us make man according to our image. Compare that sentence, okay? Let us make man to he begat a son according to his likeness after his image. What's the difference? Make and begat. Well, one's a term of creation. One is a term make. What is making something? Well, making is something. To make something is to take what already exists and turn it into something else. But to beget, well, that's procreation. Or the metaphor thereof. Images of oxen, cast molten oxen. What image will ye compare to him? Model pattern, appearance. Ah, what happens when we go to court? We make an appearance, right? What does the maxim of law say there? What does not appear does not exist in the legal realm. If you don't appear, then you don't exist. And if you can't be made to appear, then you can't be said to exist in the court. Followed by genitive, the appearance of anything, an appearance resembling something. Well, it gets a little confusing then. Well, so wait a minute. If man resembles a God, as opposed to beginning, we were born of them. If we were made like a science experiment is made, well, that's very different, isn't it? So who made them? It becomes the question. What's going on here? This is not talking about the original creation of something, is my point. There's a big difference between something coming into creation, or existence, if you will, and something that's already exist being made into something else, or turned. And what's so interesting about the Babylonian creation story is that it doesn't seem that there's really a time where men weren't already there. I don't know. It's such a convoluted thing. And of course the Bible is again very, very dumbed down when it comes to this Genesis story. It's obviously not talking about Earth. It's not talking about the Earth, because why? Well, you ever read it in order? You ever actually put the pieces together and said, well, wait a minute. How did the plants grow if the water were created after the plants? And for that matter, wait a minute. The sun didn't exist before the plants? Wait a minute. Something's wrong here. The things are being created out of order in the Bible, is what I'm trying to say. And it doesn't really make sense. What I'm trying to get at here, and again, this is all in the book, much better explained than I'm doing at this point. What I'm trying to say is that this was the creation story, not of nature, but of law. A new law, a new system, a new simulation, where the laws of nature could be bypassed. And that's the theme that I'm trying to get to today, is that the whole mess we're in is because the law is not being followed. And when I say the law, let's break it down. You have the laws of nature. Now, the laws of nature are not something that you can really, with any dignity, deny. They're self-evident. A plant needs light to grow, unless it's a special kind of plant. A plant needs water to grow. It needs minerals and food. It needs, you know, there are certain self-evident laws of nature that, when broken, cause the death of nature. Or at least temporary. Or the alteration of its harmony. These are the laws of nature. As soon as man interferes, then it's obvious that the laws of nature are self-evident, because we're interfering with them and thus causing damage, right? You have the law of all the instinctual things in the animal kingdom, the bug kingdom, the fact there are certain bugs that cannot live in this world, certain parasites that have to have a certain animal or other type of host to even exist, and for that matter, the animal itself can't exist without the parasite, or the plant can't exist without the fly or the Venus flytrap, etc., etc., etc. There are laws of nature that, though we can never know their source, in other words, we can never know what the we can never scientifically say what creation is. We therefore have a religious concept of it. But you have to keep it real. You have to keep it self-evident. You have this notion of self-evident law, or the law of nature. That also then goes into the law of nature, nature's law, God's law, etc., which we say is the law of what should be our conduct towards nature and towards each other. This is, of course, the natural law, or God's law. It's self-evident. We all know right from wrong, if you will. And the reason that it's self-evident is, again, the state of being that we're in today, this mess we've gotten ourselves into, should be pretty much proof enough, since everything that we do is against the Bible at this point. The natural law, the law of nature, law of source, keeping your name clear, you taking no marks, taking no numbers, pledging no oaths. This is what the Bible teaches. This is why we're all in trouble, because we don't do anything of the law. In fact, we enter into contract. And once you're into contract, all of the law, you have no access to any other law. It's the law of the contract. Contract makes the law. The other maxim is that the very important maxim of law is that the creator controls. The creator controls. That is a simple to understand maxim if you understand that the word God is a general term. Who's the God of nature, and who is the God of fiction? Who's the God of legal things? Why, government, the Pope, the King, the United Nations, these are gods. The fourth beast, United Nations, in my opinion. The God that springs from all other nations, right? Well, that sounds like the United Nations to me. So, you know, you're talking about a society that has completely lost its way from what we call the natural law. Now, you talk about it, you know, if you're an atheist or an anarchist, you say natural law, natural law, natural law. You never give the Bible credit. We say things all the time and never give the Bible credit. Yeah, okay, I get it. I understand. I used to do the same thing. And then all of a sudden I look and there it all is in the Bible because I actually read the thing. You know, the truth will set you free. All those things, they're right out of the Bible. I guess what is the truth but reality, nature, not money, not remedies in money. Nothing in there is real. Nothing in there is truth. Nothing we call truth in the truth movement is actually truth. It's actions of men, not actions or acts of God. It's once you get this, everything becomes so clear. But getting it, getting there, my goodness, what a journey. And so basically, what has happened is that we've fallen away from the law. Now, I want to go back before we get any further here and continue with the Encyclopedia Judaica, the names of God, right? The Hebrew language would naturally use the Canaanite vocabulary for terms designating their own deity. When Joshua told the tribes of Israel assembled at Shechem, that their ancestors had served other gods. He was referring to the ancestors of Abraham, as is clear from the context. And again, that's the definition for names of gods. Then it goes through each name. So we go to the divine epithets here. Although before the time of Saul, Israel generally rejected the idea of human kingship as an encroachment on the Lord's sole rule over Israel. In other words, a vicar, a replacement for, i.e. God, a replacement for Jehovah, which again is the king, the president, the pope, etc. Anything that calls itself a god. Remember, the creator controls the... God makes the air is another one. At a later period, the chronicler did not hesitate to speak of the Davidic kings, like King David, as the Lord's representatives. Representation. I'm representing the God of nature as a man. In other words, King David, the Davidic kings. Seated on the royal throne of Yahweh, YHWH, which is actually, you know, again, you throw a couple of vowels in there, you get Jehovah, as it was originally spelled without a J, etc. I really want you to get this. This is coming right out of the Encyclopedia Judaica, okay? The Davidic kings were called God. And this is why the translation of the Bible is so misleading. And of course, a king who calls himself God is going to say the king David was a god. And God did this, and God did that, and God cut off their heads, and God killed the children. You know, I actually went through some of these lists that are out there, and I've disproved almost every single time they say God, the God of nature, Jehovah, kills or murders or maims or causes a curse. It's always a man. But the word used is God, and so we blame God for everything, when in fact we should be blaming ourselves. And this is why I'm not sellable now. This is why no one will take me on, because I'm telling you, you're responsible. You are solely responsible for your own problems. There is no Jew forcing you to do anything. There's no gun pointed at your head. That's all crap. This is purely a voluntary system. It is your choice to follow the law. And I tell you again that the allegory, the metaphor of Christ returning is, in fact, a metaphor that means that the law of God, the natural law, will return to men's hearts. It will become their only law, and they will deny Babylon, the new Babylon we're experiencing right now. They will ditch the old law, the legal law, the Jewish law, and they will, Jewish meaning Antichrist, and it will, they will come over to the new law, the fulfillment of the law, the natural law, etc. The avoidance, this is for YHWH. The avoidance of pronouncing the name YHWH. You got to understand that in the old customs, which is actually just a misunderstanding, as we'll see, was the old custom was to not say the word God or YHWH. It was unpronounceable. It was meant that way, or it was considered unsayable, which is why you have words. Other words that would be used, El Shaddai, El Baal, in its small form actually means God as well, but in its capitalized form, it is actually the demon, whatever, right? And again, Baal and Jehovah are not to be confused, because in the Bible, Jehovah is very much against Baal in a couple of the verses. So that's another fallacy put out by theosophical sources. More precisely, it was caused by a misunderstanding of the third commandment, again, back to Encyclopedia Judaica, as meaning thou shalt not take the name of Jehovah in vain, YHWH in vain. But what that really means, the third commandment, is you shall not swear falsely by the name of your God, WH or YHWH, your God. You shall not swear falsely by the name of Jehovah, your God. Well, what do you think you're doing when you put your hand on the Bible and you swear to God to follow a nation, a false god, an idol? You swear to support the flag. Well, what do you think you're doing? You're swearing falsely on the God's name. You see, if we understood this, then the customs and rituals that we're tricked into doing every day, we'd understand it. Now, no man in his right mind would go in and put his hand on the Bible and say, I'm going to tell the truth in this fictional realm, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's ridiculous. And you're actually blaspheming the Bible, saying that you're following a lower law than the highest law that is recognized. You're literally screwing yourself and taking the Bible out of the courtroom when you put your hand on that Bible and swear. It's a trick. Everything's a trick. Back to Encyclopedia Judaica for L, E-L. Now, you find the word E-L a lot of places. El Ohim. How about Israel? Right? It's in a lot of words. The old Semitic term for God is El, corresponding to an element in personal names. The etymology of the word is obscure. It is commonly thought that the term derived from YL or WL, meaning to be powerful. Right? This is the notion of power or sovereignty, where you have no law above you and you rule over other peoples. This is why no man is sovereign unless you're a dictator. No man is sovereign. You forget it. The sovereignty movement might as well fold up and go home, because you cannot be sovereign. A requirement of sovereignty, unless your goal is to rule over other people, you can't be a sovereign. This is why they say God is your only sovereign, i.e. Jehovah, the God of nature, should be your only sovereign. The sovereign of the universe is what it's called. So how can you take upon yourself another God, i.e. sovereign, i.e. that which is more powerful than you, or law, system of law, that is more powerful than your sovereign God? I mean, it all starts making sense, and it all starts making sense not as a religion, but as law. Two competing systems of law. That's all we're talking about here. Two competing, utterly opposite systems of law. And understand the Bible, you have to understand the legal system. To understand the legal system, you have to understand what it's against. Nothing can be known unless you know its opposite. Light can not be understood without darkness. Reference must be had to understand opposites. To understand one thing, the Its opposite must be understood. I can't stress how important that is. When you realize that the entire system of all nations, all this law, this law of nations, law of persons, is set up strictly and purposefully against the Bible, everything changes. I don't know what to say. It's really enlightening. In the Ugaritic myths, El is the head of the Canaanite pantheon, the ancestor of the other gods and goddesses, and the creator of the earth and its creatures. Creatures, by the way, creatures is create, has create in it, so creatures, creations. But he generally fades into the background and plays a minor role in the preserved myths. Again, we're talking about the Babylonian creation story, Genesis. In the Bible, El is seldom used as the personal name of God. So sometimes it is used as the personal name of God, i.e. Jehovah. El Elohi Israel, El the God of the Patriarch Israel, in other words, in Genesis 30:20. Like Elohim, El can be employed in reference to an alien God, such as Deuteronomy 32:12 and Malachi 2:11, or to a strange God, as in Psalms 44:21 and 81:10. It can also have the plural form, Elim, which means heavenly beings, in Exodus 15:11. What else? Moreover, El, not Elohim. Moreover, El and not Elohim is used when God is contrasted with man. Elohim is used for man. El is used for God. Wow. Wow. Who created the heavens and the earth? What name is used in the first chapter of Genesis and no other? Why, it's Elohim. And El, not Elohim, is used when God is contrasted with man, i.e. the diving, the divine, is what I meant to say. I get to correct my own spelling here. The divine contrasted with the human. Now remember, that can mean two things: the God versus man, or the divine or God-like versus human or man-like, or what belongs to man. Human is not man. Human is always what belongs to man, but is not man. And what's interesting about that is when you look up the word Adam, it does not refer to a single character, although it does in the metaphor, in the story, the allegory, but it actually means mankind. Mankind. Kind. There's that word again, huh? In other words, the simulation. Not man, but mankind. A kind of man. Property man. Human. And it's specifically referred to as the entire human race. Not man, the human race. And there's a very important distinguishment there. Because again, first of all, Hugh is the god of Sufism. And to say human is actually an insult. It means property or what belongs to man. Hard to put into context in a radio show, but... yeah, hopefully you get the point. So there you go. Elohim is usually used for men acting as gods. Okay. Encyclopedia Judaica for Eloha or Elohim. Under the names of God, page 680 in this 13-volume set. The word Eloha, God, and its plural Elohim, is apparently a lengthened form of El for the aromatic Ella, Syrabic Elia, Ilha. I can't say these words. It is very seldom used in reference to a pagan god. It is seldom, very seldom used in reference to a pagan god, and then only in a late period. In all other cases, it refers to the God of Israel. Eloha, that is, not Elohim. The plural form, Elohim, which is in the first book, the Genesis, is used not only of pagan gods, but also of an individual pagan god, and even of a goddess. In the ancient Near East of the second half of the second millennium BCE, there was a certain trend towards quasi-monotheism. And any god could be given the attributes of any other god. Remember, it just meant to them, it meant someone with power or something with power. Could be an idol, could be a man. So that an individual god could be addressed as Elohai, my gods, or Adonai, my lords. You know, there's a reason that the queen comes out and says, hey, we're gonna force everybody to say when you address a judge, you must say my lord. Why do you think they do that? Or magistrate, because it means God. Hello. The early Israelites felt no inconsistency in referring to their sole God in these terms. The word Elohim. So there again, the early Israelites felt no inconsistency in referring to their sole God, because sometimes the word was used to mean Jehovah or the oneness of all being, etc., etc., a verb. Remember, Jehovah's a verb. It's the one instance where the word God is a verb. And if you could just wrap your hand around that, it's an action, it's something that's happening. It's not a noun. It's not a name of something. It's this is why it was unspeakable. How do you talk about all of the universe in action right now? All it was, is, and shall be. How do you put that into a word? It's too sacred. It's too beautiful. It's too deep to possibly be put into a one of man's terms, or so the history is reported to go. Now, this was, of course, it was said to be a misunderstanding. It was said to be just ritualistic, but, you know, you get the point. The word, the Israelites had no problem taking over this word, because, again, the law is changing. A new people is taking a new law. A new people is getting, you know, coming from the old into the new, being reborn into a new system, right? So you take the old stories and you transfer them over. You take the Elish, the Babylonian creation story, you transfer it over into the story of Genesis. You dumb it down. You change the characters. The word Elohim is employed also to describe someone or something as God-like, but not God. Preternatural or extraordinarily great, like the house of Samuel, for instance, the house of David, the mountain of Bashan, Rachel's contrast with her sister, right? These are all something that is Elohim, godlike. All right, are you getting it? Are you seeing now that the loose, extremely ridiculously loose translation of the word God in the Bible to cover up all of these words? See, all of these words that we just read are words used in the Bible. Okay, one more for you. Adonai. Adonai. Still under the names of God section here. This is page 680. The Hebrew word Adon is correctly rendered in English as Lord. What do we call a judge? Lord. What do we call the holder of a manor? Lord. What do we call a land? Lord. Oh, it's in the name, land. Lord. You see, the Lord has power, sovereign power, if you will, in limited quantities. In the Bible, it is often used in reference to any human being who had authority. The word God, translated from this word into the word God, which means this, you know, sovereign being, basically, was used to any human who had authority. Any human being who had authority was thus called Adon, and Adon was transferred into the word God in the Bible. Are you getting this, folks? Do you now see why I'm so incredibly driven to teach this? Because once you see it, you're no longer fooled. You know that you have to go look up every word you're reading, because you're not supposed to know this. That's why they replaced it with this generic term, God. Now, people are saying, oh, he's blaspheming God. No, I'm not. I'm taking a word that is a modern term and tearing the shit out of it because it doesn't mean what you thought it meant. It was a word used by the king to confuse, to make things that should not be held as sacred, as magnificent, when it should not be looked at as magnificent. Again, I got to read that again. In the Bible, the word Adon or Lord is often used, which a God is often used in reference to any human being who had authority, such as the ruler of a country, like in Genesis 42:30. The master of a slave, like in Genesis 24:96. And even, now this one's for the ladies, the husband of a wife in Genesis 18:12. Informal, that's right, your hubby is your God. Your hubby, as head of the marriage corporation, head of the family, responsible financially for everything, is your Lord. Informal, polite style of man, not necessarily a superior, was addressed as my Lord, Adonai. Genesis 23:6, 15, 24, 18. And several men could be addressed as my lords or Adonai. For example, Genesis 19:2. Now again, this is right out of the Encyclopedia Judaica. We're going to read the same things in the concordances. I want you to understand, folks. I really want you to understand. This book has been kept from you. It is the book of the law. Now, what do we see happening today? What do we see happening more than anything? Well, I actually watched a video. There's a YouTube video. So there are not very many of them out there, but there's a couple of YouTube guys that I like out there. They do some good stuff. One of them is called Truth Shock. Truth Shock TV, I think is what it's called. And it's always pretty interesting. I'm not sure who's behind it because it's pretty, they get a lot done in a short period of time, and it's pretty well done. I took the audio, I stripped the audio off of this, and I want to play it for you. It's about 25 minutes, because I think it's important that we understand what is happening in our society today. You see, everything that you see that you think is nuts, that you think is outrageous. Why do you think it's outrageous? Because it's going against the natural law. It's going against reason. It's going against all things real. We're in the battle between light and dark, which means fiction and reality. Okay, we're being thrown into a system of falsehoods that we call and discuss amongst ourselves as truths. But they're not truths. Only as long as we can be made to love and believe and use these artificial things, despite the fact that we know they're not real. Are you a Bitcoin user? You think you're hot shit because you have Bitcoins? You say, well, gee, my Bitcoin's worth this much in dollars. Well, yeah, it's the only way you can actually use it is if you trade it in for dollars, right? Or use it as a dollar exchange, right? Someone bought a home in Korea. They said, well, the only reason I could do that is because the Bitcoin was valued in the dollar. They took dollars. They didn't take Bitcoins for my home. They took frickin' dollars because they exchanged the Bitcoins for dollars. Don't be fooled. This is just an introduction into the cashless society. Now, what I want you to imagine right now is, let's say you were in the forests, in the hot desert forests, lost in Zimbabwe somewhere, and you come across an Indian tribe, and the tribe wants to trade with you, and they say, well, gee, if you could give me just 10 American dollars, I will give you this petty gold statue. It's pure gold. It's a worthless metal to us. We don't really use it for anything but jewelry. It's abundant. There's gold mines all over the place. Hell, there's diamonds just laying around for anybody to pick up. They're worthless, too. You can have those, too, if you want. And you're like, and all we want is 10 American dollars. But you're like, oh, my God, what do I do? Oh, okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you 20 bitcoins. 20 bitcoins are worth $1,000. Just, I don't know what this exchange rate is. Exchange for what? Nothing for nothing? Debt for debt? Blank information for information? This is all bullshit anyway. And the tribe's like, well, what's a bitcoin? Well, it's something I've got in my computer. Well, what's a computer? Oh, it's something. Well, here's a 16-bit encryption code. That what's a code? What's encryption? Oh, what's 16? wait a minute. I don't know. How can I give you the bitcoins? Well, okay, so they don't actually exist. They're not real. But I want to give them to you. And I'll give you 100 bitcoins. Just give me that gold statue, please. Well, you have to have something to trade. Well, I'll give you the shirt off my back. Well, I don't want your stinky shirt, stupid American. I'll give you all my bitcoins. Oh, come on. And suddenly you realize you have nothing. You have information in a computer. You're literally, you've got all your assets in the Matrix. And the problem is, you see, the Matrix, you can't use what's in the Matrix in the real world. What's in the Matrix is just computer codes. It's worded language. It doesn't manifest into anything real. And this is how you know. You suddenly know for the first time in your life you've been duped into this cashless society. Nothing. Nothingness. Nihilism. We worship nothingness. Out of nothing comes nothing. Right? And this goes back to the notion of, that's the real sort of notion of the word creation, is that God, quote unquote, creates out of nothing, but no man can create from nothing. And really, that's the only point of it, is that we can never understand true creation. That's what they call us and nature and everything creation, and the creatures, creatures, something that man cannot do. And really, that's the only important part about it, is just to understand that what is God is everything that's not man-made. You know, all the ideas, the concept, the lies, the tokens, the images, all the information, the languages, the mathematics, all the arts, the liberal arts, the everything. It's all man-made, guys. You want to live in truth? Well, then you have to. I won't say you have to get rid of all of that, but you have to use it wisely. You have to not respect the artificial values of things. You have to not respect the fact that a name is more powerful, or that the name is worth money, or that anything is worth money. It sounds really difficult because we've not grown up that way. Everything is based on currency, of course. What does the Bible say? It's right there with me. I mean, I'm not giving you my opinion, really. It's just, I'm just speaking what the Bible tells me. No usury, no money. No, just charity at all times. Love, yeah. I don't know what to say. How can you demonize it? And I do know how, because there's a whole organized counterculture out there to destroy not just the Bible, not just your opinion of it, but literally the law, the very law of reality, the very laws of nature they're trying to change. And so I want to play this from Truth Jock TV, I think is what it's called. I want to play this little clip and we'll come back and have a little discussion about it. So here it is.
Because of the multitude of the whoredoms of the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcrafts that selleth nations through her whoredoms and families through her witchcrafts. Behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will discover thy skirts upon thy face and I will show the nations thy nakedness and the kingdoms thy shame.
A recent editorial in North Carolina's leading newspaper says that when it comes to transgender issues, girls must get used to seeing male private parts. Girls must get used to seeing male private parts. Now, I want you to see how quickly this agenda is moving. This agenda to bring in transgenderism is far above and beyond gay marriage. Now, you may think, what are you talking about? Gay marriage is nothing in the world more than a ruse to cover up what's really going on. Transgenderism is going to go to the very heart and soul of what makes this nation a nation and what makes you who you are. Here is a remarkable revelation. Now, you're about to hear something. You're about to hear something that is blasphemous. The Huffington Post has uncovered a fact that thousands of biblical scholars and theologians have missed. Jesus was the first transgender man. That is a bold leap, because what she has done is go to the very heart and soul of the atonement, of the incarnation, of the Godhead. And by doing that, she's recreating and she's making a monster out of God, and she'll recreate it in her own image and her own fashion and her own way. And so the point here, though, is that this is quite a thing for them to print something like this. Now, think about it a minute. We live in a generation today, 2016, that if you look at somebody the wrong way, they get offended. We live in a generation today that if you say anything that's not part of the political correct dictionary, you're accused of hate speech. We live in a generation today that's so picky and so easily offended with anything and everything, you know, that you have to be very careful today or you're going to make somebody mad. Yet they can take this, and they can turn my Lord Jesus Christ into a pervert, and I'm not supposed to be offended. Or they can take a bottle of urine, and they can put an image of the Lord Jesus down inside a bottle of urine, and I'm not supposed to be offended. In plain words, they can say anything they please about a Christian, and we are supposed to roll over and take it. That's the kind of hypocritical, duplicitous generation that you're part of today. Don't let them flim-flam you. They do not want freedom of speech. They do not want debate. They do not want to be, they do not want to have to be able to stand up and defend their position. They want to intimidate and browbeat you and force you to remain silent and shut you up and keep you from being able to put your thought or your idea into what's going on. By doing that, George Orwell said, the time's going to come. You know, he wrote the novel, 1984. Big Brother, he said this a long time ago. He said, the time will come when Big Brother controls everything you say.
In our world, there will be no emotions except fear, rage, triumph, and self-abasement. The sex instinct will be eradicated. There will be no loyalty except loyalty to the party. But always, there will be the intoxication of power. Always, at every moment, there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. The moral to be drawn from this dangerous nightmare situation is a simple one. Don't let it happen. It depends on you.
And that is exactly where this thing is headed. Have you ever noticed that there is an explosion of transgenderism going on today? Have you noticed there's an explosion of lesbians showing up today? Have you noticed there's an explosion of homosexuals, sodomites showing up today? Why is that? I've often wondered why all of a sudden, I mean, I was born in 1946. Folks, back then, things weren't like they are now. Why all of a sudden we have this explosion and perversion? Why all of a sudden we have all these people that are getting so mixed up about their gender identity and everything has changed? Where did all this come from? I know this. I know that they have received a spirit. I know every one of them have a spirit. They've received that spirit. Where are we now? While Americans have been distracted by same-sex marriage, transgender activists have been quietly changing laws. Quietly changing laws. Changing laws.
And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. And they shall be given into his hand until the time and times and the dividing of time.
Transgender activists have been quietly changing laws all across the nation to redefine humanity on their terms. To redefine humanity on their terms. In fact, the enactment of gender identity laws has in many cases outpaced same-sex marriage legislation. So far, they've passed in 18 states, the District of Columbia, and about 150 municipalities. By the way, did you know that on Facebook that they've got a category over there for gender identity? And did you know that they've got over 50 separate subheadings under gender identity? You need to go down the list and find out which one you are. Is that what it is? I missed something somewhere. I thought you had male and female, right? But it's amazing. Now listen to this. We're in talking about laws now. Laws. Now the transgender revolution is going on offense. In the past few weeks, a virtual blitzkrieg of drag has rained down upon us from the media. Here are just a few items in the lineup. There was a big ink with a cover girlish Laverne Cox, transgender star of the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, on the cover of Time Magazine's June 9 issue, which announces we are at the tipping point of the mainstreaming of transgenderism. Are you getting this? To greet Angelina Jolie, star of the long-awaited movie Maleficent, on the red carpet at its premiere. Oxford University Press just the other day published Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, a resource book that is supposed to grow the transgender movement today in the same way our bodies, ourselves, grew feminism in the 70s. On June the 22nd, the National Cathedral Episcopal in Washington is scheduled to host the first sermon delivered by an openly transgender priest. Henry VIII would roll over in his grave. A barrage of meme-driven articles are appearing with titles like I am the best feminist because I am dating a trans woman, or my story is not your growth experience, and on it goes. It's ironic that those leading the charge for transgender revolution would claim there's only one right side to history. Nevertheless, none of this should surprise anyone who's been paying attention. The whole movement has been prepped by the push for genderless marriage. The Supreme Court's Windsor decision last year and its consolidation by activist judges striking down state laws on marriage has been the cue the transgender movement has been waiting for. After all, the T for transgender in LGBT has been around for decades, custom built into that agenda. There is much, much more to come. There's no end in sight. How deep are we into this transgender thing, she poses. On the surface, the transgender package, which is an assortment of gender identities, to many still resembles a fringe movement or a passing fad. So lots of folks have been duped into thinking the purpose of it all is to grant equal rights to a minority demographic. But it's really about changing the language and redefining us all. You young people in here in your teen years and your 20s and your 30s, if the Lord doesn't come back soon and catch us, you're about to face something that you can't even imagine. These convoluted lexicons foisted upon a docile public are daunting, and they're no doubt meant to be. Interestingly, use of such linguistic gymnastics happens to be an essential device in teasing out a cult mindset. Margaret Thaler Singer, an expert on cults, has written about the role of rhetoric in stifling independent thinking among cult members. As members continue to formulate their ideas in the group's jargon, this language serves the purpose of constricting members' thinking and shutting down critical thinking abilities. One large international group, for example, has dictionaries for members to use. One can search from term to term trying to learn this new language. According to Singer, Orwell reasoned that if a government can control all media and interpersonal communication while simultaneously forcing citizens to speak in politically controlled jargon, it could blunt independent thinking. As we navigate the labyrinths of identity politics, we must never forget that forcing changes in our language forces changing in our thoughts. And in the case of gender identity, this means accepting language that universally redefines, or perhaps more accurately, undefines us all. She dealt with the issue of the changing of the language. She also deals with the issue in this paper about how that the government will eventually change its attitude toward marriage itself and children as they relate to their parents. It's going to change everything that has to do with the structure of the home. The structure of the home is the foundation of civil society. If they can destroy the structure of the home, they will create a global citizen. A global citizen that is nothing in the world more than an ottoman to be told when to move, where to move, how to move, and they'll be under the complete control of the state. You see it right now working in the very heart of people because they're changing their vocabulary and the way they view things. The sad thing is that my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. People go to church houses today that they hear nothing that I'm telling you right now. They're completely ignorant of the fact that there is an agenda out there to destroy the very things that they hold dear and sacred to their heart and to their soul. To my knowledge and to my understanding, if they've taken your children away from you, you got nothing left. You can go to your house and you can drive your car. You can fly your plane and float your boat. You can count your cash. But if they've got your children, you've got nothing left. You are a pauper. And they are doing everything they can right now to eventually take your children away from you. That's not supposition. That's fact. Now, what's going on? If that doesn't have a chilling effect on people, tell me what would. What kind of a government are you living under if it can take your children away from you simply because you disagree with the agenda? The New Atlantis, a journal of technology societies, produced a remarkable, far-reaching landmark study which offers a summary and an up-to-date explanation of research on sexual orientation and gender identity from the biological, psychological, and social sciences, covering nearly 200 peer-reviewed studies. In a nutshell, here is what science and medicine, not popular culture, media, and politics elite, political elites tell us. Number one, the belief that sexual orientation is an innate, biologically fixed human property, that people are born that way, is not supported by scientific evidence. This is not coming from a church. This is coming from scientists. Likewise, the belief that gender identity is an innate, fixed human property independent of biological sex, so that a person might be a man trapped in a woman's body or a woman trapped in a man's body, is not supported by scientific evidence. Number three, only a minority of children who express gender atypical thoughts, and let me explain that. I'm sure you know what that means, but maybe some of you don't get this. Sometimes a child, a young child, very young child, may say, I think I'm a girl, or I think like a girl, or something of that nature. That's what that means. Now listen carefully to this. Listen to this. Only a minority of children who express gender atypical thoughts or behavior will continue to do so into adolescence or adulthood. There is no evidence that all such children should be encouraged to become transgender, much less subjected to hormone treatments or surgery. You know what this means? You know what he's saying here? They're saying that if a child even talks like a boy, talks like he may be a girl, they take that child and they begin to pump hormones into it, female hormones, they begin to They begin to deal with that child psychologically, physically, and every way under the sun to make sure that that little boy does indeed become a girl. Listen to this one, number four. Non-heterosexual and transgender people have higher rates of mental health problems, anxiety, depression, suicide, as well as behavioral and social problems, substance abuse, intimate partner violence than the general population. Discrimination alone does not account for the entire disparity. Now, who did the subject? The authors are Lawrence S. Mayer, MD, MS, PhD, and a professor of statistics and biostatistics at Arizona State University, and Paul R. McHugh, MD, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences, who for 25 years was the psychiatrist in chief.
A shocking announcement made by the American Psychiatric Association, APA, in its latest edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders caused an uproar among pro-family organizations and many others. As the APA states, it now classifies pedophilia as a sexual orientation or preference instead of a disorder. Sandy Ryles, cultural expert and talk show host on the American Family Radio Network, has issued a statement on behalf of the American Family Association in response to the APA's position on pedophilia. Just as the APA declared homosexuality an orientation under tremendous pressure from homosexual activists in the mid-70s, now under pressure from pedophile activists, they have declared the desire for sex with children an orientation too. It's not hard to see where this will lead.
Jesus, turning unto them, said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children."
The formation of such people of the future begins in special kindergartens.
By mandating the tranny bathroom, the government, aka elites, are trying to gauge how well their chemical gender bender poisoning systems are working. At messing with the genders of the kids. Most likely a student will have to fill out some paperwork given by the teachers as to what bathroom they are using. Okay, this paperwork questionnaire will be recorded and sent up the chain to the government, aka the elites. They will then use this data to determine if more gender bender chemicals are needed to screw with the genders of the kids. Also, knowing the genders of the kids will likely be used to put these kids into special accelerated programs.
The formation of such people of the future begins in special kindergartens.
Also, knowing the genders of the kids will likely be used to put these kids into special accelerated programs. Listen to this now. The genders of the kids will likely be used to put these kids into special accelerated programs. The gay kids will get access to accelerated and leadership programs, so that they are pushed into positions of power.
The formation of such people of the future begins in special kindergartens. Here is one such preschool institution in Sweden. The kindergarten Egalia has been operating since 2010 in Stockholm. Here, the children are treated as if they have no gender. Instead of han or hon, which is translated from Swedish as he or she, a child is called hen, which means it.
To put these kids into special accelerated programs.
Jesus, turning unto them, said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children, But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea."
All righty, folks. So listen, I played that clip Not because I want you to get into religion. Yeah, this guy's a preacher. Yeah, but there's something special about this guy. And I'm sorry, I don't have his name. I don't have his information or any of the other speakers there. But to give them due credit, but I got to tell you, this guy has it. You know, he understands. So when you're talking about changing the law, you got to understand, and this is one thing that I didn't fully grasp, but, you know, law is, when you're following the law, that is peace. That's true peace, not the kind of peace that the government talks about. Remember, when you're talking about government, you're talking about different words when the words peace and war and peace. This is why Orwell again said war is peace. Well, that's a true statement in the legal realm, because remember, all peace is free flowing commerce. It's when all the nations, all the countries out there are in a state where things are not escalated to a point of violence necessarily, where trade is happening between interstate, intercontinental, international, and the monies are being respected by each, the internet laws of nations are being respected, etc., etc. In other words, I mean, really all that means is that the kings are being respected, the gods are being respected, and we are in pursuit of mammon. We are in pursuit of trying to acquire more and more of what they own as users of another's property. That is really what's happening. And why is war peace? Well, the whole time we're under military occupation and rule, right? Difference between martial law and military rule is simply peace and war. Okay, military rule is essentially the same thing without the presence of weapons in your face, or as Orwell so eloquently stated, a boot. You know, that life could in the future could be envisioned by a boot on your face. You know, this is then war, because commerce is stopped up. No one is, you know, some country like Russia, for instance, who says it's not going to accept the U.S. dollar anymore. Screw the U.S. and all its piracy and all of its international espionage, all its false flags, all its false wars, right? That's going to cause, or the chances are, that's going to escalate us to a point of what? War? Well, why? Because the superpower is going to cry out in pain and say, oh, you're not respecting our dollar anymore as the world currency. So we have war. That's all it is. But when you're talking about real peace, when you're talking about the kind of peace that's in the Bible, all you're talking about is a bunch of people who are following the law of God, the law of nature, right? That's it. That's what peace is. War is when that law is not followed. But the war, the aspect of war, in this case, is chaos, lawlessness, anarchy. Oh, but I'm an anarchist, and I think anarchy means this. Well, you're wrong. I'm sorry. Look at any dictionary, any encyclopedia, any source that is not one of your heroes, one of your false heroes, and you're going to see. Anarchy means license. It means a lawlessness. It means it is necessary to understand that meaning, because, again, what are they doing? What are activist groups doing? What did they do with feminism? What did they do? What are they doing with pedophilia? They're changing the language. They're changing the law. Well, anarchy doesn't mean lawlessness. It just means no ruler. No, it doesn't. That's not what it means. And that's not what it was. I should say that's not what its intention is. Because, again, what's a ruler but a god? No God? That's your answer? That's your best answer, huh? No God. Okay. Well, where does law come from? This is so important. Pedophilia, a sexual orientation. Not a, you know, you're changing the law. You're changing perception, more importantly, of what the law should be. And with that comes the quelling of any debate, the quelling of sanity in lieu of political correctness. This is the changing not of society, but of the law. When you can no longer speak because you've got a virtual boot, a metaphoric boot in your face at all times, these people are getting a sense that they're winning. And we all are standing around with our thumbs up our asses with the feeling that we're losing. Why? Because they're changing the language. They're changing the laws behind our backs. They're changing the laws of normality, the laws of nature itself, to their will. Now, when you look at the Bible and it talks about this type of stuff, this is the sign of the end. This is the sign when everything will fall apart, because no longer is the source and the normality and the construction of nature being respected. And this goes into, so now what happens? We've got our transgenders. Transgender. What about transhuman? What happens when the transhumanists now say, well, if they can be transgender, I can be transhuman. I can have robot parts. And robots get rights just like people. Robots are persons too. That's already happening, folks. Look it up. I'm trying to tell you that this is a precedent. The feminism was very much a precedent. This is even more of a precedent, because this is going against everything real. The law of the reality is being altered in lieu of the law of fiction. Okay, when that starts overpowering reality, we are in deep, deep doo-doo. So, what happens when transhumanists start claiming that we have no right to stop them or to prevent our children from being taught about the glorious reinvention of man and nature into transhumanism? At what point will this be enough? At what point will you realize, as the gentleman just was talking about, that once they take your children, they've taken everything, they've taken your entire identity away from you. They've taken the only thing that you can actually, in reality, call property. There's no property anywhere else. The one property you have what's the maxim? The creator controls. You're the procreator of your child. It is your property, your responsibility. And next week, we're going to focus on the child. We're going to focus on what it is to go through the birth certificate process, birth certification, or what's called taxation, registration, and why the whole world is now being taxed, i.e. registered. So you can't tax anything you don't own. You can't tax anything you don't own. Thus, all people on earth must be put into persons, legal identities, artifice. See, the only way to control you is to control the person, the vessel, the avatar that you use. That's why they need Caesar, even in the Bible, said all men must be taxed. The Pope has said all men must be put under the Roman Curiae, right? This is not new. As in the days of Noah, so shall be the return of man. Well, if yesterday, which for me is today, because I'm pre-recording this show, if we're talking about the return of the Son of Man, and that will happen in the days, when the days appear to be as in the days of Noah, when everything was in debauchery, when chimeras were being created by men, when men were not respecting the law, well, and so Noah built his ark, metaphorically, of course. Maybe we should expect a great flood. Maybe we should welcome a great flood. Again, metaphorical term. I don't know what to say, folks, but I think the one thing that that guy said the most that affected me was the fact that if they take your children, you have nothing. But he also said the churches, religions, are a part of this. They're not talking about what he's talking about in his rectory there. People aren't being privied to this type of understanding of what's happening behind their backs. People don't understand because they're in religion. They're not in law. They're not following the law. They're following religion. They're following a doctrine, i.e. law. That's what doctrine means. And when the Bible says, take no other doctrine before this, that's very, very important. What are we allowing to happen? We are taking a law before that of nature's law. God's law. I can't stress how important this is. We are not standing up to fight. We are not even turning our ears from it. We're glued to our television to watch all the perversion as it happens. And it is perversion. Perversion is, again, it's just a word. You know, we use it as an insult. We call someone a pervert. But what happens when you alter something? You pervert it. When you're altering something real, something natural, something beautiful, you're perverting it. And they're taking these children, as he mentioned, and they're popping them full of drugs. They're giving them surgery to literally surgically alter their sexual organs and sexual functionalities. They're psychologically destroying any chance of them ever being and fulfilling their duty in nature to be a man or to be a male or a female, I should say. Remember, woman is a legal term, so I don't like to use it, just like human. The male and the female, very important roles in nature. Everything from the stamen of the flower being the male or masculine part of the flower. See, a lot of this has to do, as he was saying, with altering the language. Because how do you alter the law unless you change the words? Change the law, the language, right? Changing the language is changing the law. The rhetoric, right? Remember the trivium? Why is the trivium so important? Because you have to have proper grammar before you can acquire proper logic, and only then can you have proper rhetoric, what you say about what you've learned. Well, our grammar is being... it's already bad enough that it's in English, and English is such a bad language. It's also being altered. What did he say? He said... a universal redefinition of us, of nature. In fact, that not only are they redefining what it is to be a man or to be one of the 50 gender whatevers, specific pronouns, but the notion of undefining what we really are. Defining words is just as important as redefining the words. Turning us into global citizens in this thing we call identity politics. Global citizen. Well, what's the point of it? Global citizen just means basically there is no nation. There are no nations left. There is no sovereignty left in any aspect of any nation. That's a global citizenship. And remember, states, nations, and countries are nothing but states of the United Nations. Just as the states are members of the United States and subject to it, so is the United States just a state of the United Nations and subject to it, to an extent, obviously, but that's growing and growing and growing. Just as the United States, through trickery, deceit, and prestige, which means trickery and juggling and deceit, did the same thing. Put itself into power over the actual states that created it. Right? The This is chaos. This is out of control. And yet you worship the United States as if it's not, as if it hasn't declared you its enemy, I should say. As if it hasn't declared you its enemy. And yes, it has. Trading with the Enemies Act. It altered the language. It changed the law. It used to be that foreigners would be considered enemies. And then it changed the language of the bill. And all of us became enemies of the state, or i.e. potentiality, potential enemies of the state. See, it's just a matter of changing a few words. You can alter an entire law by changing one word. And that's what they do on a constant basis. You don't see it happening because they'll come out with a bill, a water bill, and as a subtitle somewhere hidden far beneath, they'll put a caveat, a earmark for some other bill that changes the wording, has nothing to do with the water bill. This is the fire bill or the farm bill, and suddenly you have a completely different bill. Because they voted for the water bill. The water bill just happened to change another law that had nothing to do with it. This happens at all the time. They even have omnibus laws that they put forward that change 50 different things at once. It's ridiculous. Another show we'll do in the future is the history of the United States, what Congress is, why there's two Congresses. Congress actually created Congress. And well, that's what the Congress of Title II or III, whatever it is. It's a corporate structure. So they wear two hats. There's Congress assembled. Hey, we're here representing our states. And then there's their second job in the corporation of the United States, where they're members, i.e. employees of the government. They created their own little side job. And we'll talk about that sometime. But, you know, I saw that this is what was happening. This is why I learned the law. This is why I went to the Bible and learned what the Bible was. I saw that all the legal stuff goes back to the Bible, and the Bible always goes back to the legal or warns against this legal nonsense. So, again, that little Orwell clip is always an incredible thing to hear. The sensation of victory, right? That constant sensation that you're winning the argument because political correctness is on your side. It gives you the metaphorical feeling of placing your boot on someone's head and not allowing them to speak so that you can win every argument because, hey, if you know, what's happening in other countries? We're still, I guess, fortunate in this one to still be able to talk about the one thing you're not supposed to talk about, which is Judaism, this false, as we call it, the synagogue of Satan that's ruling everything now, these false Jews that are... the Zionists, the ADL, all of these programs that are going on in school, that's where they're coming from. I'm telling you, if you go look, you will see that the ADL is responsible for most of the programs that are going on in school, including Holocaust education, including the transgender and trans this and trans that, they have anti-biased education, anti-bullying. All that stuff is coming from the ADL. And most importantly, the banning of books is coming from the ADL. We cannot teach Shakespeare's, for instance, Shakespeare's story of Shylock, the Jew, because it portrays Jews in a bad light. Right. So, yeah, ban that book. Virtual banning of books. It's brilliant, really, because now, you see, kids are being taught on computers. They're being taught about nature through a freaking computer image. A virtual tour of nature, not the real thing. And that is perhaps the biggest tragedy of all. So behind the scenes, you got transgender activists who are very organized, very, very organized, changing the laws. You already had the bathroom law. You know, you want to solve that, just give everybody a private room to go piss in and everything's solved. But no, we have to make public restrooms with multiple stalls and allow women and men, boys and girls to, you know, it's like a frickin' concert bathroom. So disgusting. So, you know, again, I have to say, what happens when transhumanists start changing the laws? What, at what point are you going to leave her? Because what they're doing is they're creating Babylon. Again, they're creating a, if you will, pagan or, I don't even know what to call it at this point. They're creating society or recreating it back into the days of Noah, just as we're warned will happen. The idea of, again, shutting off the ability of critical thinking, the ability to debate, the ability to apply the trivium because it's politically incorrect to tell the truth. Remember, God is truth. Nature is truth. There is no other truth. Male and female is a self-evident truth. It cannot be denied. However, you can change the laws to make denial illegal. This is identity politics. And I tell you, when you if you're talking about an absolute global, universal redefinition of nature, redefinition of, i.e., creation. Well, remember something very important, and that is that the Creator controls. The Creator of identity controls he who uses the identity. These identities are registered. And once you assume that identity, the only way that you can protect, get benefits, and use that identity is to submit to the rest of the law of the U.S. or whatever nation, United Nations, etc. This is a ruse. This is a way. This is an inducement to contract. This is a way to get people to who otherwise might not be citizens, meaning followers of the bad law, the legal law. This is a way to get people to start following a law that is actually designed to be against them by offering them certain benefits, certain unnatural qualities and characteristics, flattering titles which we're not to respect, upon their persons which we are not to respect. You see, the notion of having this identity, it's not you that's getting the identity, it's your person. The person, remember, is property of government. It is the status the government allows you, grants you to have in its jurisdiction. It is the property owner of that identity. Now remember, this is why your identity can be stolen, because it's not yours. Now, this is why your identity can change, because it's not you. It's just not you. It's not real. And so this is where we stand today. This is what we're up against. The reason I am spending so much time on this today is because I want you to understand that most of all, at the heart of this is the changing of the language, one of my favorite subjects, and the changing of, therefore, the law through the changing of the words and the meanings of words. A complete deprivation of language. And he was also mentioning that they have dictionaries now of slang, right? Just like the Eubonic Dictionary or the Dictionary of street language or slang. Well, now they have are creating a tome of defined words, redefined words, and ideals and perceptions, of course, that go along with it. And now you have a dictionary of terms. That's patently ridiculous. I mean, talk about the devil's dictionary, right? Talk about the adversarial dictionary to what is real. That's what we're talking about. This is scary stuff, folks. I mean, really, this is truly, truly scary stuff. Now, the last thing I will say and comment on is, of course, and we are running out of time. Thanks for joining me today here on UCY.TV. The last thing really is this notion of gender bending through chemical poisoning, through the alterations of the brain, alterations of the body. More and more, this is becoming an apparent fact in our lives. We're being altered because the government changes a few words, allows certain chemicals, certain poisons to be introduced into the water supply. We already know about fluoride. We already know about chlorine. Chlorine, of course, chlorine gas, a war tool, right? We chlorine does as much or more damage as fluoride. So we're talking about changing a few words and allowing a chemical lobotomy of society to the point where, again, it's affecting the brain to the point where we're docile. We don't want to fight. We don't want to debate. We don't want to talk. Might as well give us Soma and get over with it. Soma from Brave New World. What do you say, folks? Crazy stuff. I don't know. I don't really know what to say to end this, other than, you know, it's funny because the rule here is that we're not supposed to incite any kind of violence or incite any kind of riotous behavior, etc., etc. And I agree with that policy 100%. And yet, what exactly? That is a politically correct thing to do when you're talking about live radio like this, right? And I understand that, but at the same time, what animal out there, when cornered, does not fight for its children? What? Tell me why, when they come for your children, you gladly give them over. But let's say they come for the pound, wants to get your cat or dog. You'll fight. You'll scratch. You'll fight. But when it comes to your children, I understand. It's the law. You can take my children, etc., etc. Something's wrong here, folks. What we do fight for is what we shouldn't be fighting for. What we support is what we shouldn't be supporting, right? Medicine kills. Law destroys instead of protects. I mean, there's just everything is backwards, as in the days of Noah. We're in crazy land, man. And what does Orwell say? He says, don't let it happen. The moral of the story, don't let it happen. He's warning you that it's going to happen. Don't let it happen. Do you think that means sit back and watch? Be frustrated and obfuscated at every turn by political correctness? Or do you think that means take some frickin' action? Do something about it? Do you think it means be nonviolent? I don't think so. And I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to talk about this, it's taboo, but, I mean, get real. You know, get real. Well, that brings us to the end here. I do appreciate you joining me here. Again, UCY.TV. This has been Red Pill Sunday School. And again, next week we'll cover some Let's just say I finally found the verification of what everything I've been looking for in a single word, and we're going to cover that when we come back next week, Sunday, 5 p.m. Thank you so much for joining me. Take care, and teach your children well. And remember, while Jesus Christ may love you unconditionally, God thinks you're being a real asshole. Take care.